You guys got it? Okay. Wow. The kitchen is crackling this morning, and it's an all-new episode of the Will Arnett Breakfast Podcast.
Will.
So get your turkey bacon ready, because we're about to sizzle up some
Hang on. We're doing Smartless.
We're still doing Smartless.
Yeah, it's the only one. It's
okay.
The only one, yeah.
But are we going to get to the breakfast?
No, you should have had breakfast already, dude.
Okay. All right, it's an all-new Smartless.
Smartless.
So your mic's coming in from over the top today, huh? You're usually under-mic'd, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm using my 87, which is my broadcast mic.
Oh, yeah.
Will, it looks like you have sweat coming off your...
Yeah.
Will, are you nervous?
I was running around. I am actually nervous, but I was also running around trying to get my mic fixed, and I could not fix it. And
that caused all that sweat?
How did you break your mic? Did you have a bad peanut butter chocolate session? What's the name of the... Oh,
you know what I would say about that joke? It's lazy.
Yeah. What's it's lazy? I'm just pissed off because I still don't have free Reese's.
You threw around just a bunch of info, but it was lazy. You didn't put it together.
No, I don't usually. Well, I'm
tell
not
you
paid
what's really
right.
Well put. I tell you what's really well put together. It's a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Are you sorry?
I'm not sorry.
he's the best. God.
Wait, but
he's
Will, trying best. To fix your microphone whipped up all that sweat that's dripping from your face and your body?
Wait, what's wrong?
Yeah, usually one doesn't really sweat when you just plug stuff in.
I had to run upstairs, get some pliers, get some things. Oh. It's hot in here. I just took a sauna.
Oh, that's why. But you have air conditioning on, right?
No, he's still sweating from the sauna.
Yeah, but I'm like, I worked out. I got, you know what
okay,
I mean?
Okay, okay.
Sean, did you exercise at all today? Were you helpful to your body?
No, not at all.
No?
Well, I want to tell you a little story, something that happened to me and Scotty.
I want to hear a story. I want to hear a story about you and Scotty.
Okay, great. Here we go. So it was a couple weeks ago. Scotty and I had a dinner to go to, and I walk out of the closet. And I walk out of the closet, and he says, you're really going to wear that? I'm like, what's wrong with it? And he said, it's too matchy-matchy. We can't both wear the same color red shirt. It looks weird. And I was like, what do you mean? This is dark green. He said, no,
it's red. By the
way,
I haven't owned a red shirt since I was 4.
Oh, I have a red shirt. And I said, we can't wear the same. I said, mine is green. He said, no, it's red. And we just both looked at each other because we both knew that how colorblind I am. And I was like, oh, and I switched shirts. But when I was younger, I worked at the Gap. Remember? And girls would come in and they want to put together outfits for their boyfriends. This is what reminded me of this. And I'd be all confident and they'd walk out with like a mustard yellow sweater and shit brown pants and like a bright red shirt. None of it matched. And the coworkers would be like, after the transaction was done, they'd be like, hey, are you okay? Because that looks terrible. And they were like, are you sure? I was like,
yeah. Are you clowning our customers?
Now, are you doing it to fuck with them?
No.
Colorblind.
I was colorblind. And I didn't really admit it. And so I was putting together these outfits.
I got to start listening to what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was surprised.
Probably that help, right?
I should know that he's colorblind.
It's going to cut my questions
I'm
in half.
Super, super, super colorblind.
You would think that that the Gap, that would be like the first test they would give you. Probably
I know, they
some
don't,
sort of
though.
Security clearance, and then if you're colorblind.
Now, you're colorblind, and what's the deal? You think that there's a cure in McDonald's food? Is that why you... I don't understand the correlation.
Why are you shoveling in so much McDonald's all the time?
Hey, guys, I'm up for the challenge, if that's what it takes.
Chin-Chin does not have a cure for colorblindness.
I'm getting Chin-Chin for dinner tonight.
Not
of
a shocker.
You are.
But it's so funny because those girls, because they didn't know like what looked good on their man. And I was like, I can take care of that. And I was putting together these outfits that were so ugly.
Huh.
Yeah.
Believe it.
Yeah. I'm not a big, anyway. What I do want to do though, if I can switch gears for a second, I want to get to our guest because I am really excited. You asked me before if I was nervous. Yes, I am nervous. It's not why I'm sweating, but it would not be unusual for me to sweat thinking about, you know, having this person on our podcast. This is somebody that I have a great, great deal of for real, what we call for real skis admiration for.
I don't think anyone says that.
People, a lot of people, well, they're going to start saying it. For real skis admiration? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know it makes it sound less important.
God, he's so nervous.
For real skis.
But I'm really, really nervous. This person's been nominated, I think, for 7 Academy Awards.
Now I'm sweating.
Okay. Received an Academy Award in 2009. I don't want to say what it's for because I don't want to give it away yet. Could have received an Academy Award, in my view, probably five more times for other roles. This is a guy who has consistently delivered. I can't even name his movies because you're going to immediately know who he was.
Okay,
the first time I actually met him was only a few years ago because his brother played my dad. So for a minute, he said that he was my fake uncle. He's the guy who started working with his brother and his dad when he was super young, and he has never stopped. And
Michael
all he's
Douglas?
Done is really incredible, interesting stuff. It's none other than Mr. Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges! Oh, damn! God, I was so close.
Thanks for having me, Will, and you guys.
Hey,
Jeff
man.
Bridges,
what a pleasure. To be with you. I dig all of you guys so much.
Oh my gosh, God. Jeff, this is so cool to see
you.
Yeah,
this is wonderful.
Listener, first of all, you should know that Jeff is sitting in one of the yummiest looking rooms I've ever seen. This looks like a downstairs.
Yeah.
This looks like a basement. It's got a wood ceiling.
It looks like a set.
No, it is. You got it, Sean. This is the barn from the Horror House of Heaven's Gate.
Wait, what are you talking about? Are you being serious?
Michael Cimino, the director, you know, they were going to burn the set down because the owner of the land didn't want it on his property. And Mike said, anybody want it? And I raised my hand and we numbered the logs and we put it 400 miles south and set it up. And this is where I've lived with my wife for about 40 years in Montana. Yeah.
No way, man.
In Montana.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh my God! You know that's a film I've never seen, Heaven's Gate.
Oh man!
Now that was the famous sort of like that it did like the first big studio flop. But I've heard subsequently that it really wasn't that big of a flop.
No, it's kind of a masterpiece, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know it so much of your experience of seeing the movies is how you're pitched, you know, what your setup is when you go in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you get these, you know, they had such terrible reviews, you know.
Right.
One review was, if they shaved Michael Cimino's head, they would find 3 6s. He is the devil, and he's, you know, making devil movies.
Oh my God!
That's rough.
Oh, it was just terrible. You know, there was such animosity between all the suits and the reporters and everything. But it's a brilliant movie. I would check it out if I was you. I think you might. It's a long sucker. You know, it's about 4 hours long. My wife Sue just had a wonderful Photoshop. She was taking pictures all through it, and Vilmos Zsigmond, the cinematographer, kind of took her under his wing and mentored her, and there was this beautiful photographic exhibit that she's got in Livingston, Montana, and we had the producer up and Joanne Corelli, and it was an exciting moment.
Now you're a great photographer too, correct?
I
feel like I've seen some really, really cool wide angle black and white shots of Fisher King, or do you do it on every single movie?
Just about every movie since Starman.
Okay.
Wow.
And it's called a wide lux camera, and it's a panning still camera. And if you go on my site,
jeffbridges.com,
all right, look at the photography section, and you will see.
That's a good plug.
You like that?
But then you've got a wrap gift for everybody. Every single film you do.
It's
smart.
And it's putting those things together. You know, the editing is tough because you take rolls and rolls.
Yeah.
Have you ever had some scumbag studio executive say, hey, we can't have you taking a bunch of photographs on set?
No, man. No. And
dare.
The Thesbos, you know, us actors, you know, I know what it's like, you know, to have any lens pointed at you that freaks you a little bit, you know, but... Yeah, you know, I haven't gotten any complaints, and I'll give them the camera, and we'll jam a little bit. And
right?
Yeah, they get in the pictures too.
I'm so excited you're here.
Hey Jeff,
cool.
So let me ask you a question. I want to kind of get into it for a second. So,
I took a picture with you, Will. Remember our picture that I gaffed?
Yeah.
Our prom pose.
Our prom pose was so good.
Yeah, yeah. At some point, yeah, you have to show that to the guys.
I know. I got to get that. I don't, where is that photo?
I don't know where that is. Who took it? Yeah.
It's so good. And Jeff's sitting on my knee and we were both doing press for something, and we were in New York, and he said, you're playing my brother Bo's son, so I'm kind of like your uncle, your fake uncle. But I wanted to ask you about Bo, who I adore.
By the way, he played my dad on Will and Grace.
And he played your dad on Will and Grace.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think he played my dad, too, in a thing called Thanksgiving Promise. Of course.
I think I was in that, too.
I think you were, too. I don't think we worked together, but I think both his sons were in it as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Wait, he's played all of our dads.
I think so.
That's wild, that crazy? Man. So I have all of, I'm your uncle. Yeah. I'm Uncle Jeff.
So Uncle Jeff, answer me this. So you and your brother, Bo, and your dad, Lloyd, starred in Sea Hunt together. And this I was going to kind of say, once again, not unlike our friend Jason here, you started at a young age working in TV. How old were you, Jeff, when you started doing that, the Sea Hunt?
Oh, I must have been 8 or so.
Mm. Wow.
But I was, on my first movie, I was 6 months old.
Oh, my God.
And I heard you were a nightmare.
Yeah.
John Cromwell was shooting a movie, and my parents were friends with him, and they needed a little baby in the shot. And Jane Greer was the actress, and so my mom said, oh, take my baby. But I was a rather happy little kid, and I needed to cry in the scene. So my mom said to Jane, "Oh, just pinch him." And she did, and of course I cried. And now we cut 35 years later, and I'm working with Jane in a movie called Against All Odds, which was a remake of her great movie Out of the Past.
Yeah.
And we have a scene together. And I say, Jane, I can't get there. I'm having some problems achieving the emotion I need in this scene. Would you just please pinch me? Just a little bit. So that gave us a good chortle.
Do you have how is your trick for crying? Everybody's got a different technique for crying on camera. Is yours? Do tears come easy to you?
I don't think so, man. What do? I
look at a photo of my dad.
What do you do?
I look at a photo of my dad. It's a long
you
story.
Do, and that does it.
No, sorry. You finish the sentence. He looks at a photo of his dad coming home.
About home, exactly. And
that makes him cry.
Every time he hears tires squealing, it kind of triggers it, too.
Gosh, it's always a challenge. How about you guys? What do you,
Jason, I heard one time, I heard a rumor, Jason, when you were doing, this is a true story. Yeah,
is
when
it?
You were doing, this not a, I'm not setting myself up for a joke. You were doing a scene on Office Christmas Party, and everybody was cracking up in the conference room, right?
Uh-huh.
And everybody was going crazy, and they're all cracking up, and you were the only one, and you had to keep it together, and you're not. And Will Speck said to you, do you remember this? We talked about this about a year ago. And he said, how are you not cracking up? Everybody's cracking up. And you said, I just imagine all of them dying and terrible things happening to them.
I also like...
And I was like, what a psycho.
I do something similar to that when people get the giggle fits, on a comedy or something. The only way I can keep a straight face is by just convincing myself that they are destroying the movie with their childish, sophomoric humor. I get like real high and mighty and indignant internally.
What a blast.
I just find disgust in them.
Well, that's fun.
It can be very funny for the other Thesbos, man.
Yeah, for the other Thesbos. Where'd he go?
Jeff, what's one of the relationships that you cultivated on a shoot that you now that ended up in a lifelong friendship? Like, is there
a dream come true was doing Baker Boys with Bo. Can you imagine how much fun we had,
That's
man?
Cool.
I mean, if it wasn't my brother, you'd spend a lot of energy trying to figure out how do we create the illusion that we're brothers. You didn't have to mess with that. But.
I think about you every day when I'm driving on Sunset Boulevard. That incredible
Beverly Glen.
Against all odds, right?
Against all odds.
Oh, with Jimmy Woods. Oh man,
that car chase
wasn't that great?
It hasn't been beaten yet.
that was an amazing thing. And it was right by my parents' house there on Sunset. We had all the traffic going east locked off.
Yeah.
Right at rush hour, and there are all these people going home to the beach, and in the middle of the shot, and we're going 90 miles an hour, you're in the middle of oh, no, let's not go to the beach. And they'd hang a Huey, you know, and get in the shot. Oh, it was frightening.
You couldn't
man.
Shut down Sunset through all those rich homes right now today.
Oh, God.
They'd no never way. Put up with it. Yeah.
No way. Come. You, Jeff, you did, there were a bunch of movies you did in a row that I mean, first of all, I feel like you've had like so many different kind of phases, you know what I mean? Like, you did all these things early on, and you made a lot of great movies, and Last Picture Show, and then you did, and then the 80s, you know, you did Against All Odds, and a bunch of other, I mean, amazing Starman, and all these other great movies. And then in the 90s, you did, like, a whole other, you had, like, you keep on having these different phases, and you made, like, Fearless, which I loved, which I thought was a really fantastic. Underrated movie. That changed.
That's hard to watch. I can't watch that movie.
Your
anymore.
Performance of a guy who has faced death and then now is living his life with this fearlessness because of that experience.
Great
that
concept.
Really spoke to me. It was really impactful to me. Your performance really, I really got it. I really connected with that. And then that was actually after you had done Fisher King. And in the same way, I really connected with what that character went through in that movie, and your relationship with Robin was incredible. And it was a Terry Gilliam directed, right?
Yeah, man.
Fisher King. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, as you're mentioning these different movies, they start to explode in my head. You know? Fearless was Peter Weir, who was just incredible.
Yeah, Peter Weir's great.
The director.
That plane crash was just so well done that I can only watch it the once. Because he literally puts you on a plane that's falling from the sky for minutes and minutes minutes.
Yeah, that whole movie was, you know. But each one, they're like little lifetimes, aren't they? You know, one is like a little incarnation, you know. And sometimes you get to work with the same people again. You mentioned Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
God, he was just so wild to work with. And Robin, you know, another kind of director wouldn't have allowed Robin to do the kind of stuff that he would do. But, you know, we'd be working, you know, 16-hour days. It'd be 4 o'clock in the morning. Everybody's dragging ass. And then Robin would get up, and he would start to jam on all of the cast and crew, you know. And he would go on and start busting chops, you know. And other director, you know, would say, okay, Robin. But Terry would say, yeah, but what about him? You know, and Terry would add him on and go on for 15, 20 minutes. Oh, yeah, this is fun what we're doing. And we had the energy to complete the day. But Terry and I are still close. We FaceTime all the time and catch up with each other. And then we did a weird movie, probably the weirdest movie. I think, certainly the weirdest movie I've ever made. And I think it might be the weirdest movie Terry made, called Tideland.
Oh, wow. I've never heard of that.
I play a junkie rock star, and most of the movie I play a carcass, just dead. Overdosed. But it's a very bizarre movie, and again, worth checking out.
With all the time that you've spent on sets and all of these sort of families that you've met and built and then said goodbye to, right? All these groups of crews and casts.
Yeah.
How much, and you're usually in a leadership position such that you can affect the harmony, the ecosystem, the whole situation there. Is that an important thing to you? You seem like the kind of guy where it would be, and that you would enjoy sort of setting a tone on the set so that we can all enjoy our work experience. Mm-hmm. That you strike me as that kind of guy.
You hit that's the most important thing, man, I think. I mean, my dad, you know, you mentioned Sea Hunt, and, you know, working with him when I was 8, you know, a little kid, and he would set me on his bed and teach me all the basics, you know. Don't just say your lines. Listen to what I'm saying and then make that, you know, have something to do with the way you talk about it. Now go out of the room. Now come back and do it differently. You know, he would do all that stuff. But the main thing I learned from him was his joy at work. Mm-hmm. And whenever he came on the set, that was just contagious and was shot out. I got to work with him as an adult twice with Francis Coppola in Tucker.
Sure.
And Blown Away.
Yeah.
And that was such a gas, man, to, you know, do that advanced pretending with my dad, you know, as an adult. Yeah. Like, we would jam so, we had such fun, man.
Advanced pretending.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. but you know, that joy thing, you know, it makes you relax, right? And then all the best stuff can come out of that relaxation and you feel safe and, you know, it's,
yeah.
And we will be right back.
Thank you to one of our new sponsors, My Mochi Ice Cream, for supporting the show. I just discovered cookies and cream, My Mochi Ice Cream, and I'm a little obsessed, but I'm a lot obsessed. Do you not know what My Mochi Ice Cream is? Picture this. It's a perfect little scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream wrapped in the softest, sweetest dough known to mankind. My Mochi Ice Cream is sweet, it's chewy, it's cool, it's creamy, all at the same time. It comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. That cookies and cream, I've always been a cookies and cream fan, but then when I had the My Mochi, oh my gosh, I mean, I was like, my mouthy loved it, first of all. An absolute knockout. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are gluten-free and about 90 calories each. You can find My Mochi at Target or go to mymochi.com to find your nearest grocery store. Discover the cool, creamy, joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today. We get support from Canva. When your work, presentations, and docs look good, you look good. And you can design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform. It helps people design compelling visual content and is great for designing any type of presentation and great for any teammate. So our team at SmartList is using Canva when they're coming up with different design concepts for various things with related to SmartList and SmartList Media, because we have a lot of stuff going on. It's a busy crew, okay? And if it wasn't for Canva, they'd all be fired. Supercharge your work with AI-powered Canva presentations, docs, videos, and more. In just a few seconds, you can generate slides and text from a prompt. AI is built into Canva right where you work, so you can stay on task without any app switching. It's AI that's easy to learn and even easier to use. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva is perfect for any work task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8-plus acres. I got to keep it down, because if my hens find out, they don't have 8-plus acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're going to go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. I just, as I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg Eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose Happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts.
And now back to the show.
Did you learn most of what you use today as an actor from watching your dad, or did you study strictly? You know, like
I studied a little bit at Berghoff in New York, but I didn't really learn much there. It's mainly on the job training, right. You know. I mean, just and Bo, you know, Bo. I don't know. This is a story I've told before. Maybe you guys haven't heard it. I'll tell it again if you like.
Yeah, please.
You know, one of the tough things as an actor is where am I going to get an audience to practice my stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So Bo, he's about, I don't know, in his early 20s. I'm about, you know, 15, 16 years old. And
Jeff, I got to tell you, you look terrible.
For 15? For 15?
Yeah. We're going to side text you after this interview.
Yeah, I didn't sleep well last night. So Bo rented a flatbed truck. And we would get some scenes together. We were working on some Holden Caulfield, you know, Catcher in the Rye scenes, you know, and other scenes. And he worked it because we were trying to get me an agent and so forth.
Right.
We'd get this flatbed truck and we'd pull into a supermarket. And our father taught us how to do stage fighting. And so we would stage a fake fight.
Up in the flatbed?
No, in the parking lot, you know. Uh-huh. And we'd get, you know, we'd act the shit out of it.
Right.
And the crowd would come around and we'd say, no, it's a show. And we'd jump up in the back of the flatbed and we'd do our scenes until the cops came. And then we would try to improv the cops into our scene, which really pissed them off.
No way.
And then we'd say, okay, we're going. And we'd get in the truck and go to the next supermarket.
Traveling
show.
We played
the supermarket circuit, man.
That's hysterical. But that was all in and around Los Angeles?
Yeah, yeah.
And what made you want to go, you know, to the farm life in Montana?
Well, I did the movie up here with Clint Eastwood called Thunderbolt and Lightfoot.
Sure, huh?
And I fell in love with Montana.
Yeah. You know,
Got me a Harley Davidson, you know, rolled around and that.
Because it's the opposite. It's the absolute polar opposite of Los
Angeles. Have you guys been to Montana at all?
I have, yeah.
I don't think I have, no, but I hear it's gorgeous.
Oh, it's sweet, man. It is sweet.
Yeah.
And then I made a movie called Rancho Deluxe up here, and that's where I met my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what
was she doing on the film?
She was they used to do brain surgery in this old place. It's like a big, it's a hot spring and stuff called Chico Hot Spring. And she was working her way through college as a waitress or a maid. I don't know. She did all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting in there. We're in the hot spring doing a scene with Sam Waterston and Harry Dean Stanton, right? And Richard Bright. You know, we're looking there. I can't take my eyes off this gorgeous girl, man. She's got two black eyes and a broken nose, and she's just gorgeous. I cannot take my eyes off her. And so I finally get the guts to ask her out. She says, no. No. Uh-huh. I say, no? She goes, no, maybe small town, maybe I'll see you around. And I said, oh, okay. And her prophecy proved true. And I think it was at the rap party. I saw her and we danced. And, you know, that was all through Rome. Now, this is, again, a story I've told many times. If you guys have heard it, try to act like you haven't heard it.
No, please. We love it.
We'll do some advanced pretending.
So now we go, yeah. So now we cut 30 years later. We're married. We've got all these kids. And I'm at my desk opening my mail, and I open this letter from the makeup man on that show, Rancho Deluxe. And he says, I'm going through my files, and I found something that might interest you. you was two shots, two photographs of a local girl that you were asking out. So I have a photograph of the first words that I've ever spoke to my wife.
Oh, wow.
Saying, would you go out with me? And she's saying no. And click, I have that picture.
Now, did he know? Did he know he was sending it to you?
No, he had no idea. It was married? My wife. No, he had no idea.
What a valuable thing.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's my prized possession. Whenever I think we're not meant for each other, any of that.
How long you guys been married now?
Going on 45.
Wow. How many kids? You said you got a bunch
of kids. Three kids.
How old are they now?
They're like, 40, 36, 34.
You got any grandkids out of them yet?
I got three grandkids. Bennett. Yeah, Barbaco went to school with my middle girl, Jessie. She just She just had a little baby, Leon, and I've got Gracie and Ben.
Do you? I would imagine I'm going to be a real goofy granddad. I'm going to be very excited to watch.
Oh, you think you're going to be less grouchy than you are now?
Definitely.
How many kids you got?
Jeff, I have two daughters, 15 and 10. They're little angels.
Oh man, two daughters. Mm-hmm. So I got three girls.
Did any of your kids go into the business?
You know, unlike my dad and my mom, who really encouraged me to go into it all.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. You know, I really dragged my feet about going into it, you know.
Yeah.
I had so many other things to do that I wanted to do, and I resisted. You know, but that's kind of my MO in life. I resist until I can't do that anymore and get sucked in. But, I didn't give it to my kids. I didn't present it to them early enough. But they've cued me, and I can say, oh, you got this. You could do this, And they say, no, I don't want to do it.
Did you dissuade them at all from it? Because I know I do that with my girls.
No. I didn't know. I wanted them to come from them, because my parents, like I said, I was carried on at 6 months old. I mean, they were shoving it down my throat, man. Who wants to do what their parents want you to do, I didn't want to do it. I had other things to do.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I have three boys, and my middle son, he's a really funny kid, but both his parents, my ex-wife and I are, we're both in sort of comedic actors or comedians or whatever, and so we're hesitant to actually push him into it, but at the same time we kind of want to just leave it open to him, and if that's what he wants to do, we're not actively dissuading
him. And then there's the whole thing about competing with your dad or your brother. Yeah, I didn't want to get into that thing either.
No, exactly. That's weird, right? I mean, Jeff, think about it. Your dad, Lloyd, was an actor for ever. Huge star. And your brother, too, man. I mean, that's an intense dynamic. It could be anyway.
The competition there or lack of it, was it, I know I dealt with that with my sister as well, and we were always just very kind of open and upfront about, we took it as a positive, listen, we've got extra things to talk about now at the dinner table, that's all. Was it ever an issue with you guys? I would imagine
not. It was really, it's like being on the same team, basically. Yeah. And like you say, there's so much in common, so much great stuff that you can talk about, that's it's not always like that in families.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want to, when we did Baker Boys, that was no competition. That was like just a gas, man. Yeah. It was fun and working with my dad. So I don't know, so much about what we worry about, it's fantasy. It doesn't happen,
I'm such a believer in that, too. All the worst things that ever happened to me never happened.
Yeah, what's that, that's that quote, what's his name? Samuel Clemens,
Is that what he said?
Who's the guy? This is something, I don't know if it's COVID or old age, but my memory, man.
Yeah, no, you it's guys, me too. Yeah.
Do you guys have too. Had COVID or no?
No, you I've had a really bad case of it, didn't you?
But even before that, I reached for something in my head, and it's just not there.
Yeah.
And then you try to, it's like trying to remember a dream, and the more you try to remember it, the further it slips away. And so now I just say, fuck it. It'll come back to me in 5 or 10 minutes.
Who wrote Tom Sawyer?
Mark Twain.
Mark Twain. Samuel Clemens. Thank you, man. Mark Twain said something about that. What you were saying, Will, you know, we worry about all this stuff.
Yeah, all this shit.
And it's all just so painful, and it's all not, it's unneeded.
Jeff, I'm glad we're talking about this now, because just to get real for a second, I've been going through a thing lately, and I don't know if it's because of the world around us or what, and I've been kind of, like, bummed out. And I'm by nature, these guys will attest to it, by nature I'm a very optimistic person.
Joyful.
And joyful. And I wake up every day, our dear friend Robert Downey said a few times in the last couple of years, nobody wakes up in the morning happier to be themselves than you, he said to me. And it's true. I'm very happy and joyful. Yeah. Yeah. And I've been kind of bummed out, man. And I'm like, is it because I'm getting... I'm asking my Uncle Jeff now, is it because I'm getting older? Am I going through, I don't know what's going on, but why am I have a sense of ennui right now.
Yeah, but look at Jeff. Jeff's the most joyful guy we've had on the show
ever.
I
know, but maybe he's gone through phases, man.
Oh, I go through phases, man, that emotional weather shit. Now, I wake up in the morning. My mornings are terrible, so challenging, man. Oh, I wake up, I go, oh, another day.
Really?
I got to do it all over again. I got to do this. I do these little exercises that literally take only 5 minutes. You guys might want to check it out, especially if you got any back problems.
Yeah.
Called foundation training. And it's about 2-3 minutes, but it's painful and it's torturous.
Yeah.
And I say, I got to do that. I go, anyway, I got to have a couple cups of coffee and then I'm feeling good.
Right.
But, you know, I think, well, it's the weather, right?
Yeah.
And then also these obstacles, you know, the difficulty, the challenges of where we are now.
Yeah.
Those are all opportunities to us to figure it out.
Yeah. And also opportunities for us to kind of, you know, gnash our teeth a little bit. Like the older you get, I think the more you become aware of things that are just not great. You know, just become smarter. Your radar becomes more acute, and you can notice more things that could be better. You know,
yeah. And the thing that you know, your guys' generation, what is it now? When I first heard this word, I said, "Are you kidding me?" The great career now is, I want to be an influencer.
Right.
You know,
that's not us.
And damn it, I want to be an influencer. I think that's, you know, and I guess we all are, you know.
Yeah.
And in one sense, I talked about this thing that Bucky Fuller, you know, the geodesic dome guy, turned me on to, trim tabbing. You know, he made this observation with the big ocean-going tankers, the challenge the engineers must have had with this, to make a rudder big enough to turn this ship. And it took too much energy to make that rudder turn the ship. So they came up with a simple, brilliant plan of putting a little rudder on the big rudder.
Yeah.
So the little rudder turns the big rudder and the big rudder turns the ship. And Bucky said, this is a perfect metaphor for how all of us individuals are connected to society and our culture. We're all trim tabs. You guys, what you're doing here on the show, you know,
right,
this is all a trim tab, and we're influencing. We're saying, hey, guys, what about this? Check
so
this
am
out.
Am I the big rudder or the small rudder?
I love that. You're the small, you're the big rudder, and I'm turning you, Sean. I'm turning you. So listen, I will say,
you've been influencing us and a lot of folks for a long time with all these great roles, and I, as Will was saying earlier, I love the way that you have bounced between back and forth between leading man and character actor just so effortlessly for so long. No one can do that. You tell me one leading man that can, you know, bite off a big, spicy, chewy character and not look like he's chewing up the scenery. You know, you got real chops, Jeff, and you always have.
Thank you. A lot of that came from my dad, because I saw how much he struggled doing Sea Hunt.
Mm.
He, you know, got that character so down that people thought he was a skin diver.
Mm. Right.
You know, and they sent him a bunch of skin diving scripts, you know. And
yeah,
he's a, you know, Shakespearean trained actor. You know, he replaced Let's go see. Here's a name I just forgot. Man of La Mancha.
Mark Twain.
Anthony Quinn.
Who was the famous, you know, I am I Don Quixote.
Is that Anthony Quinn?
Who was that?
No. It's but on Broadway, you know, he replaced him. And I remember doing a movie, Blown Away, a movie I did with him.
Sure.
And I said to the producer, hey, I got a guy who could play my uncle. He kind of looks like me. He's a good actor. And the guy said, who? I said, Lloyd Bridges. And he laughed. And I said, why are you laughing? He says, well, your dad is a good actor, but he's more of a comedian, really. I said, what are you talking about? And it's because my dad did Airplane.
Right.
And so he was labeled for a while as a, you know, he's just this comedy.
Right.
So I went out of my way to mix it up, and mm-hmm. do 180s as many times as I could earlier.
I think that's really smart, man. I got a lot of, I did early on. People came to know me because of Arrested Development. I think that people thought, like, and I played a lot of characters who were, people used to say, oh, you play a lot of assholes. And I said, no, I don't play assholes. I play characters that are, like, that have a lot of issues and that are unhinged, but they're not, I never see them as assholes. I always just see them as, not connected to reality in some way, or they've got something going on. And like this character we did on Arrested, he was like, his dad didn't love him, his mom didn't love him either. And then, you know, whatever. But I think that you get into that as an actor. I feel like for a lot of time, people are like, oh, you just kind of do this thing. And you're like, yeah, nah, it's not really. Since when? Like, who gets to decide that's what I do now? You know what I mean?
I love it when comedians play bad guys. Like, you know, remember Robin, when he did those two or three movies back-to-back where he played the bad guy?
One-hour photo.
And
then Albert Brooks played a bad guy.
You guys have dark sides, too, that you can tap into, right?
Yeah. Show him. Take your hat off, Sean. Yeah. Show him your
dark side.
I got crazy hair. Yeah. That's like a murderer's hair. Wait, Jeff, are you still doing music? Do you still play? Do you still sing?
You know what I'm doing now is kind of fun. I'm going back into what I call my music mind and looking at, you know, a bunch of stuff that I kind of didn't, you know, have too much faith in. I'm bringing those things out and I say, oh, I dig this. This is pretty good. Mm-hmm. I'm jamming with my buddy T-Bone Burnett.
To mentor me
a bit and say, you know, what do you think about all this stuff? Shall I just make these little albums for myself? Because I don't know what to do with it, but I'm having fun with it. I love music. You know,
I like his wife too. What a neat couple. Callie's so great.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. If you could go back in time and see one concert from a band that's either no longer together or artists that are no longer with us, what would it be? I know mine would be Led Zeppelin.
Oh, wow.
I was thinking of the Beatles. You know, you see Ronnie Howard's that movie, and they played that last Shea Stadium thing with a good sound.
Yeah.
That concert would have been great, but I bet the sound was so bad that it wouldn't be that great.
Right.
But do you remember a thing called Rock and Roll Circus? Do you ever see
no.
that?
Uh-uh.
No.
Check that out. Google that. Rock and Roll Circus.
That's a concert movie?
Something that the Rolling Stones, they hosted. And it's just, you know, I think The Who is on there. I think John Lennon formed a band for it. It's a pretty wild little.
Like an early music festival?
It's an early music festival. Oh, okay. Yeah, but it was like a circus vibe. All in a soundstage, I think. Yeah. It was something like that.
Wow. Sean, what would you go see?
From that's not no longer with us?
Maybe
the first.
That's what you said, that's no longer with us.
Well, yeah, like, or just.
Could be no longer with us or a band that's now defunct, yeah.
Well, I just got to say Ronnie Hawkins, because Ronnie just bit the dust recently. Mm-hmm.
Ronnie Hawkins.
And I don't know if you guys know him, but he was quite an amazing cat. I would like to go see one of his early shows with the Hawks, who were, you know, then were, they became the band.
I was going to say, I wish I could go and see that Last Waltz concert. That's what I would have liked to
see. That
would
have been a goodie, yeah.
I probably would have checked out the Carpenters. Is anybody still listening?
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear my answer?
I interrupted you, Sean.
Hey,
yeah,
Sean.
The Carpenters, man.
Yeah.
She had a beautiful voice, didn't she?
Yes.
Are you being facetious or are you
I'm being both.
You're being both. See, yes. that's real brilliance, man.
Because I was a huge fan. I was a massive fan.
But you're also being a little bit cheeky.
No, but I never really
big fan of the Carpenters.
Dude, I used to listen to them all the time. Oh, and Simon and Garfunkel. Voice. I would have listened to Simon and Garfunkel. All right.
I'd love to see that concert they did at Central Park. That would be fun to go.
One of my favorite concerts I went to was a double bill with Paul Simon and Bob Dylan.
Oh, man. Oh,
Jesus. Wow.
And Paul Simon comes out. They kept, you know, they switched who would open for the other guy.
Yeah.
And Paul Simon comes out, and he opens with something like America, you know, and he's got two drummers, violins, horn section, you know. And I said, how is Bob going to follow this, man? And Bob comes out, he's got, you know, a bass, a drum, a piano, and a guitar, you know.
Yeah.
And what does he open with? Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Oh, really?
You know, and again, Sean, you don't know if his tongue's in his cheek or not, man.
Right.
It's just perfect.
Right.
Hello, darkness. That's my song, man.
But you got a Bob Dylan t-shirt on, don't you?
Yeah.
Look at that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm a total fan, man.
Oh, wow.
I got to work with him in another weird movie that he wrote with Larry Charles. Do you know who Larry Charles is?
Yeah. What was the movie?
It's called Masked and Anonymous.
What?
Check it out, man. Look who's in it. Look who's in the thing, the cast that he's in. But it was Larry Charles and Bob Dylan wrote this over about 3 years. Dylan's the star of it, and Larry was his first thing he directed, man.
Wow.
And it is a trip. Oh, my God.
I gotta see that.
What a cast.
The albums I had on rotation when I was a kid were, I wrote them down, The Carpenters, The Eagles, The Cosby, stand-up.
Comedy album.
Comedy record, yeah.
George Carlin's comedy album.
Yeah.
And then Simon and Garfunkel.
And Erasure Unplugged.
Well, Erasure everything. I know every word to every song.
Oh, sorry. Fully Plugged. Erasure Fully Plugged.
How about Nichols and May? Did you get into them, you
Nichols
guys?
And May?
Nichols and May, of course.
Of the doctor stuff. What was it? A Little More Gauze.
You know, dude, I once in the 90s went and saw in New York, I saw within 6 days of each other, I saw Dylan at the Supper Club. They were shooting something, and there was like 250 people there. And somehow, I forget how I got in, but I got to see. And then 6 days later, I saw the Jerry Garcia Band. And I saw them, within 6 days, I saw them both play Forever Young, which was really cool. Dylan and Jerry Garcia. And yeah.
And they played together for a while, too. You know?
Yeah, man.
We'll be right back.
Hey, Smartless listener, we get support from Viator. You know, Scotty and I took a vacation many years ago. We geeked out because we liked the movie Amadeus, and we went to Austria, and it was fantastic. We went to all Mozart's kind of hangout places, and I know, total nerdville, but it was pretty cool, and I absolutely loved it. It will always be one of our favorite memories of vacationing, so maybe one of the most perfect experiences we've ever had traveling. And so next time you're looking to plan the perfect trip like that, an experience, check out Viator. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. Their app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you are traveling or what you are interested in. Feel better about your travel decisions by checking out real traveler reviews to get the inside scoop from others who have already checked out the experiences. Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. Plus, free cancellation to help you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and bar mates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplished something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
And back to the show.
Jeff, I want to ask you before we're done, I want to give you enough time to talk about the Coen brothers if you can.
Yeah, well, I was going to get to it. I want to talk about the Big Lebowski. This is a whole subject unto
and
itself.
And True Grit, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Jesus.
But let's start. Can we start with Big Lebowski, man, how that came to you into your orbit and what that was like?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly when, but I ran into the Coen brothers, I think at a party or something, and they said, yeah, we're writing something for you, man. I said, oh my great. Because I had seen Blood Simple, and I was, thought they were terrific. And then I got the script, and I said, what? This is like... a high school version of me that
Miss Spicoli.
What are you guys spying on me or something?
Uh-huh,
So that's how that happened. And
so they wrote it specifically for you, and that character like that. What was their answer to that? I'm sure you had said that. Why did you think of me for this part? What had they seen? What had they thought?
I don't know, man. And I said, you sure? You know, I have a history of trying to get out of parts, right. With Terry Gilliam. I said, why do you want me for this? I don't feel like this guy. I remember, I'd pitch my other acting friends, I said, what about this guy? And I probably did the same thing with those guys. Uh-huh. I can't remember when I played just before it, but it was nothing like, I had never played a part like that.
But do you remember, do you have a recollection, though, Jeff, of doing that movie? Like, when it's like you and John Goodman and Turturro and Steve Buscemi, and you're doing those scenes, and you guys are all taking big swings with these characters. Were you guys going like, hey, man, are we out on a limb over here, or are we good?
We had such a good time, man. Yeah. And when that movie came out, it didn't do well here.
No?
It had this hit Europe first, and then it came splashing back and
did
kind of well after the fact. But nobody really got it,
Right.
I auditioned for them for Intolerable Cruelty. Remember that?
Ooh,
and I went in and met with them, and they were really cool, in the 20 minutes that I got to meet with them. And they asked me, like, hey, do you get stoned at all? Do you smoke pot? And I was like, a little at the time. And they're like, okay.
Good to know.
Thank you for coming in. And I was like, oh, was that like the, was I supposed to say like all the time and then we could hang out?
Well, they probably wanted you to score some of the weed for them.
Maybe that's what it was.
Why don't you just, holding.
Yeah. Here's a weird thing, but I was a pothead before I got sick. Now I can't smoke it. But I consider myself a pothead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm kind of surprised that I didn't smoke one joint during that whole film.
Oh, wow.
No way.
Wow.
No way.
Yeah, no, I figured, I read those lines, and that good writing, it seems like improvisation, but it's not. That's every man, every fuck, it was just well placed. You didn't want to mess with that music,
I wonder how it's such a specific character, such a great version of that. Of that writing that you performed, I wonder how close it was to the idea they had for the dude.
I wonder. They had a guy, they had Jeff Dowd was a guy that they kind of modeled the character after. And I
brother of Anne?
No, I don't think so.
It's a big world, Jason. Jesus Christ. Fucking 7 billion people on the planet. Get wise, motherfucker. Hey, you know what, Jeff? You know what's funny? We had Sean Penn on the show last year at some point, and he talked about how
he's good, isn't he? He's I love him.
Yeah, he's a good actor.
He can do all this kind of
things. He's amazing.
But he's like you. He's like you, man. He's just like you. You guys are cut from the same cloth, man. And he was talking about doing Spicoli, his character from Fast Times. And then recently running into the guy that he always had in mind who he based it on, and the guy was with his kids and stuff, so he didn't say anything to the guy. He saw him like on the path to go surfing in Malibu. And the dude was like, hey, man. He's like, oh, hey. And he's like, oh, this is the guy I modeled this burnout character on. And now he's with his wife and kids, so he's like, I'm not going to say anything.
You ever see... This Must Be the Place, a movie that he was in, that based on the David Byrne song, the Talking Heads tune.
Yeah, of course.
And David's in the movie, too, but that's another good one, man. Yeah. He plays a kind of a burnout, glam rocker or something.
Oh, we had David on the podcast recently, actually.
Yeah.
He was great. Man, the Talking really cool. Heads. Now, when they came out, man, they replaced the Beatles for me.
Oh, really? Wow.
And I remember I ran into David at some bar or something in New York, and I had a few drinks. I went up to him. I just gushed. I said, David, your music, man. Uh-huh. I mean, it's so incredible, And he's just... I said, no, man, I mean, like the Beatles. You're better than the Beatles, man.
And he just stood there.
And he just... There was no answer, and I finally just had to... Walk away.
By the way, I do that. I'm very passionate about music too, and I do that a lot too. Musicians, I corner them all the time, and
What about his shows? What about that American Utopia?
Yeah, that's incredible.
I saw that live. That's incredible, and the movie's great too. And I also saw the Stop Making Sense tour at the Greek Theater.
Wow!
Really?
Greek too. The Greek.
You've seen that movie?
Well, of course, yeah. And he shot that here on his stage. That movie,
Jonathan Demme, man. Jonathan Demme. Shot that. Yeah, God, he knows where to put it.
I feel like you worked with Jonathan Demme, didn't you?
No, I would love to have, but no. But he was wonderful. God,
amazing. I want to know, so the place where you're at right now is a farm? Is it actually a farm?
So we call it a ranch.
A ranch.
A ranch. Yes.
And do you actually do work around there? Do you have the animals?
We had a bunch of, cattle and horses and all stuff. We don't need more.
Yeah. Shot them. You just shot them
we
all?
We shot them, buried them.
Yeah. It was a slow Sunday. It's like, honey, we're going to do something fun.
Let's see how many calves.
Something I ask people that have had a ton of set experience as you have you ever been drawn to direct, to use all that you have absorbed and put it all in that role, that character?
Yeah, a little bit, because I've been digging your direction in Ozark, man. Man. He writes it, directs it, acts so brilliantly.
But you're very nice. But your the stuff you have absorbed, and from the directors that you've worked with.
Yeah, but
the
actors, and I've had great luck with first time directors. Really incredible. Like, I'm thinking of Baker Boys, Steve Clovis. He must have been 24 when he wrote and directed that thing.
No way.
And I've had just great, great experiences with these guys. And, you know, as an actor, you know, you, if you create this loosey-goosey, you know, joyous feeling, you're all given ideas. And so I get a lot of my wanting to direct out and just, you know, being on the team and saying, hey, what about this? You know, what about that? That kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that you say you've had a lot of luck with, like, first-time directors and stuff, but I bet you, Jeff, I bet you spent your life making your own luck, and I bet you're coming with a good attitude, and I bet you that is fostered, you know, I bet you all of those first-time directors are lucky to have had you
making their
be
stuff
the guy
work.
In their movie. Yeah. Fuck,
Yeah, but then those first-time, I mean, look at Orson Welles. We haven't done much better than Citizen Kane, man.
Right.
And it was all that stuff that he didn't know what he couldn't do. He just said, let's jam, you know.
Sure.
And who's the famous DP, Greg Tolan, you know.
Yeah.
He was the old master. And there was a story that Peter Bogdanovich, who was a real, you know, scholar with movies, he told me a story because he was tight with Orson Welles. And, you know, Orson said, you know, I can't really get, you know, the stage direction, you know, that thing. And Tolan said, oh, just come over on the weekend and we'll, you know, no. Don't you love it with the masters when they don't put any kind of pretense and they're just, I'm one of you guys, you know, I love that.
Yeah.
You know? And Tolan, you know, said, you know, you're the guy. I want to do what you do your vision. You know, how old was he when he made that? Was he 24 in his 20s, I think.
Something like that.
And so Welles is in there, and it was in the days when everybody wore suits and ties and shit, you know, to work. And he said, now with the lighting, I want it to come like this, you know, to the gaffer and stuff. And the gaffer goes up to says, Mr. Welles, you know, that's really Mr. Tolan's job. And Greg Tolan overheard that, and he just made a big speech to the whole cast and crew. This is your director, you know, do what he says. He has a vision, you know. Do whatever you want, Ors, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
Gosh, what a movie that is. Huh?
What a great movie. And I think that what you were kind of saying, like that idea that you have to have, I remember a guy telling me a long time ago, an acting teacher years ago, like, art is ultimately absent of ego. Like, you have to be totally willing and be totally open. If you want to do something great and create something great, you got to get over your own, whatever your shit is, and let all that go and be open to the process, right?
Yeah.
This is one of the craziest things. I'm a huge sci-fi fan, and my husband, Scotty, is too. But you're not going to believe this. One of my favorite movies of all time is Tron. And he's wearing your shirt right now.
Ah, Flynn.
That's your character.
Very good, that's you.
All what right, are the odds?
Man, Tron. Right. What a big that's deal so that cool. was when it came out. With all all the years that you've been doing this, has the audience that you have been acting for internally, has that changed? Are you conscious of who you're doing your performance for? Because, like, sometimes you guys, Will and Sean, you should answer this too. Like, do you guys act for the cameraman? Do you act for the director? Do you act for the other actor that you're in the scene with? Do you act for the people that are eventually going to see this? Do you act for yourself when you're eventually going to watch it? Are you even aware of that?
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's for myself and the director, basically.
Yeah.
I always like to really, you know.
Interesting question.
Very rarely when I don't, put the, you know, I like to empower the director to have power over me. You know,
you do
I
mean? Like I mean, that.
I like that. And, you know, unless I'm getting, you know, some messages from the big director up in the sky, I try to, you know, do what the director, you know, because he can take me away from myself and my own.
Yeah. So you'll let the director push you and pull you into places that maybe you weren't even planning on going in the scene, and you're just putting trust in the editing room. They're going to weed out all the crap that sucks and only put in the stuff that's good.
The editing, that's the thing. You know, one of my favorite directors to work with, Bo did his first movie, I did his last movie, was Hal Ashby.
Oh my God.
Who was came from editing. You know, it's interesting where the directors come from, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And editing, man, I mean, God, well, you must edit that.
I'd love that part of it.
I'd like to give the director, you know, it's like photography. I like to bracket my performances, you know, do too much, you know, one in the pocket, what I'm thinking, what he's thinking, and then do something you know, on either side.
Only for the front row, yeah.
Because, you know, in the editing, you don't know what you're going to need because you always shoot out of sequence, you know.
Right, but that's putting a lot of trust in the editor and the director to make sure they
don't
Frankenstein.
Yeah, but you got to do that, don't you think, man? Yeah. If you're holding back, man, I mean, shit.
Yeah.
I just thought of a fun director story. You might get a kick out of that. So Coppola and Tucker.
Yeah.
Our second week, our first week was just kind of getting to know each other. Mm-hmm. And the second week, he gets the cast and crew together and he says, all right, now this week, we're going to shoot the whole movie on this little video camera. Vittorio Storaro, he'll be using this little wheelchair. That'll be our dolly. And you costume people, you know, look at those curtains. They would make good wedding dress. And you actors, know your lines as best you can because we're only going to do each scene one time.
Wow.
And we're going to do it in sequence. It was kind of like, you know, the Little Rascals, our gang. You know, let's make a movie. Come on, right. You know. And he's shooting this whole thing. Now, what we didn't know is to and from work, he's editing all of this stuff. And at the end of that week, he gives us each a cassette of the movie. He says, now, we've already done the movie. Here's the movie. And now we're just going to polish it up.
Whoa.
And then as we did the movie, he replaced those practice scenes with the real scenes. And even before that, he had a storyboard, and he shot the storyboard like the movie, you know, 2 hours. Yeah. So the movie was always in existence. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, so he got to do, like, a version of the movie, like the storyboard or pre-viz with all the actors.
Yeah, and for an actor, because you're always shooting out of sequence, to have that linear version of it that you could refer to.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It was really
fascinating. Do you think he was doing it to help you guys out, or was it to help himself out?
No, because if you remember that movie, it had all these it was quite advanced with all its technical, low-tech kind of stuff that he specialized in.
Yeah.
You know, like the Dracula movie with Gary Oldman was so great that way, you know.
Sure.
All that.
Oh, yeah.
And so Francis is, while he's doing that, he's in the kid mode. You know, we're just playing around. Come on now, you know, do this. And it was, you know, relaxed and fun.
Yeah.
It was a wild method.
What a master he is. I think he's doing another movie right now.
Is he?
I think
so. Oh, God. I've lost touch with him.
What do you have coming up, Jeff, that you're excited about?
Well, I've got this TV show called The Old Man, FX Hulu thing. And we started it years ago, and then I got terribly sick, and stopped for 2 years.
Whoa.
And then we went back and finished the thing.
You did go back and finish it?
We went back and finished the season, and it was like we had a long weekend, and I had this weird dream, man.
You know, how are you feeling? How are you doing, man? You look great, I gotta say.
Yeah, you sure do. Very good. I'm feeling great. Yeah. You know, those tough times, you know, it's like what you were saying, Will, about, you know, these tough times, man.
Yeah.
These tough times, they're opportunities to teach us things that we can't learn without them, you know.
Yeah.
And let's do some trim tab and let's influence as much as we can to make a beautiful movie, you know, work together to make the cool thing, man.
Yeah.
Dude, I love that. I love that analogy too. I like that idea that we're kind of like, life is like, you were saying, like, it's really cool what we get to do. If you really think about it, it's really cool what we get to do just to be alive and to have these lives.
That's right. Everybody,
and this is the big, all of us, this is the big movie that we get to do.
For sure, every day.
Yeah.
Making movies is such a great metaphor for how we can make this a beautiful world. You know, you get all these people, they have all different political, you know, outlooks and are different personalities. Some are gloomy, you know, some actors only want to, you know, call me by my character, you know, it's all kinds of different versions, but everybody's trying to make a beautiful movie, you know,
us. I love
and
that.
That's what the world ought to be doing somehow, you know. All work together, all these specialists, you know, all these masters, they get together to pull this magic trick off, one-time magic trick.
Yeah,
Yeah.
It's really so wild.
I love it because I feel like, Jeff, that you're still in love with the magic of it, not so much the details or the tech, you know, all the technical. You really, you live in the magic. That's where it is for you. And I get that sense from you, man, which I really love. Yeah. It's the thing you can't explain or write down or diagram.
But it's that paradox thing, right, Sean? It's both, right, Sean? Yeah. It's like you're into the details and you're, and then you're into the magic. I mean, it's all going on at the same time, man. Yeah. It's a paradox, isn't it?
You're always living in the present.
Yeah, that's the gig, kind of. That's what I try to do.
Yep. Yeah.
So I will tell you this. One of the other things, so I kind of, we've taken up too much of your time, but I wanted to point out that, you know, I already pointed out that you and Jason started and you're both child actors, but you and Jason also have had some voiceover experience in the world. And there was a time, Jeff, for many years when the Hyundai Motor Company had a real solid voice.
Oh, yes.
And had a guy who had a lot of gravitas.
Jason took that over. Yeah.
And then they decided that they wanted to do
something light.
And I wasn't available.
A little bit more economical, a little bit more sensible. No, here's why it was, I think. You were nominated for an Oscar. And Hyundai had bought a bunch of ad time during the Oscars. And so they couldn't have you being the voice of one of the ads because it would screw up the sort of unbiased, whatever it was. So some sort of legal thing. So I had to do one of those spots.
You did?
I think that's what it was. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, Willie, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Listen, it's not professional grade, nor is it sorry, not sorry. You know, Will's got some very big campaigns, Jeff.
Well, I mean,
you've got a wonderful voice.
Well, I'm no Jeff Bridges, but I mean.
Voice. You've got some. They're wonderful.
I'm working on my voiceover campaign. Christ. I put together.
Turn your game down.
Demo tape.
Shit! Somebody murdering a cat. What's going on? I feel like.
Your voice. You remind me of a. You know, I'm thinking that this is kind of. Promoted a few of my weirder movies on this show, but another weird one, The Amateurs. And when you were doing that voice, Sean, it reminded me of Joey Pants. Do you know him?
I love Joey Pants.
And he was playing a character called Some Idiot, and he had that voice.
But
Ted Danson, you guys work with Ted? Any of you guys work with Ted?
Yes, don't know if I've worked with them, but I do like him a lot.
He's great. He's wonderful.
Good
dude.
Jeff, I'll say this, man. We're gonna let you go because you've been so generous with your time and kind. But I we're big fans. I think we speak for a lot of people. Always have been, man, and really, really love your energy and really love what you do. And kind of like your co-star John Goodman, I've said this to the boys before. You're in that same category for me as John Goodman. You guys have never phoned it in, never turned in a bad performance ever. No matter what the picture is, you guys are always there, man.
Thank you.
And it is such an honor and a treat. And I just think you're the best, Uncle Jeff. And
you give us all a good
name,
Uncle Jeff.
Thank you, man. Great hanging with you guys.
You too, buddy.
You too,
say hi to Bo, please.
Yeah, yes, please send our love to Bo.
Father Bo.
All of our dad.
Lots of love, guys.
All right, buddy.
All right,
you too,
man.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye, Jeff.
How do you know him, Will?
Yeah, Will, how you, what, who, how do you,
Uncle
how
Jeff,
do
you, my yeah, buddy, what, Uncle Jeff?
You don't know Jeff Bridges.
Yes,
what
I do, man.
What the hell's going on?
Because cool guys hang together, dude.
No, I don't think
so. When you're cool, you hang with other cool people.
Is it like a chat room cool guys hang out in?
It's for guys who are handsome with good voices. We're in a special club.
Well, I haven't gotten an invitation.
Jesus Christ.
I'm still waiting for my,
I swear to God.
I look in the mail every day.
Is somebody drowning a weasel? What's going on?
That dude just makes me feel
He's
good.
He's the greatest.
Yeah, so when we were, so when Sean, when Sean and I were doing this show years ago, The Millers, and Bo was played my dad and on the show, and I went to New York and I ran into Jeff. We were doing the Today Show, and he was like, hey, man, I'm kind of like your uncle. And I was like, all right. And then we had to do these photos backstage. He's like, let's just fuck around. And I was like, I love that he has that fuck around in him. You know what I mean?
He's just so easygoing.
He really got a great positive vibe. And he wanted to, and so we just started chatting. And I just immediately was, you know, and I've always been a massive fan. I meant it. Like, I remember watching all of his movies. And he just has this effect. But I remember being in my early 20s. and seeing in quick succession, seeing Fisher King, which I thought that character was so interesting. And I think about that character more than I probably should. His character, who was this big DJ, and he gets offered a sitcom and he turns it down. Remember that thing? He's kind of like a shock jock.
Right.
And he ends up, his life gets turned upside down by this insane Robin Williams character. You know, so there's that. And then he did that movie, Fearless. I just remember you're talking about the crash scene, but there was, for me, it wasn't the crash scene. It was this idea, you're seeing this metamorphosis, again, of a guy who has this event happen, and he completely changes his outlook, and he lets go. And it really hit me. It was very profound to me. It really spoke to me, man. And I've just always, and then of course, Big Lebowski and everything, but I've always felt connected to that dude.
Yeah, he's just
as a fan,
such
as a
good
fan.
Energy, and he's been so consistent and genuine and sincere, it seems, for years and years.
Yeah, you hit it, Will, when you said he, no matter what movie he's in, because we've all kind of been like, I don't know if this script is so great or this script is amazing or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. He does it 100% all the time, every single role. Here's the other thing. Don't you guys think it's weird that Scotty had on Jeff Bridges'
not
t-shirt?
Not really.
I'm pretty familiar with Scotty. It could have just been like one of like five things. It could have been Star Trek, Star Wars, Tron.
I love Chin Chin.
Or I love Chin Chin. Chin Chin or Koi.
But that's crazy that he had the t-shirt on that from Tron and we're talking to Jeff Bridges.
Do you guys have a license plate holder that says follow me to Koi? Do you? I'm not flirting. I'm just being coy.
Koi is a fusion restaurant here on Restaurant Row.
According to Sean, what is it? It's a seafood, restaurant, right?
You get a lot of seafood there.
No. Long John Silver's is a seafood restaurant.
Yeah, that's a
Koi is a fucking fusion Japanese restaurant. The fuck are you?
Well, go there in about a half hour. You'll see me. But wait. Also, so the ranch that he lived on, he said there's no more like cows or horse or anything.
Yeah.
Do you think there was ever once any
bison?
Yeah.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Rob Armjarv, Bennett Barbaco, and Michael Grant Terry.
Smartless.
If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity, that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.